You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 486. Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording from you in the refuge that is my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario, hiding from the virus, which I assume is just roaming the street like a gang of thugs. Similarly, hunkered down in other locales that maybe should remain nameless. Mr. John Gentile in parts unknown.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I either am in a gang of thugs or a gang of thugs is out looking for me.
No, I was likening the virus as trying to kill us all to that. But yeah, how are you?
I'm annoyed by like this virus thing. I see a lot of smart people like, well, it's only deadly if you're 65 or older. And I'm like, oh, so if you're 65 or older, well, F you. You know what I mean? What's the point of going on? Like, I'm really offended by that comment I see all over.
I mean, if the internet has proven anything over the past decade, it is that the general public is really bad at medicine. Like in all forms, in all stripes. Anyways, also joining us on tonight's show, back for her, what is it, your second appearance, Em?
My second, yeah.
Yeah, so Em Moore is back for her second go at the podcast. So you've been here once. You've generally seen the level of lack of organization that goes into these things. you came all prepared last time, only to realize that no one was prepared. So are you less prepared this time?
I'm less prepared and I'm more relaxed.
That's good. We don't want the listeners to all of a sudden assume that we're going to try very hard, because it would really, really start to like the weight of expectations would really start to screw us up. So anyways, so to our listenership, those of you that haven't yet succumbed to the end times, this is the Punk News Podcast. We're going to talk about stuff that happened in and around the Punk News universe over the past week. Before we do that, John, any mail you want to talk about?
Yeah, so you can always use that podcast at punknews.org. We got a couple of good letters. This week, this is from Nick, and Nick titles his Get Rich Quick Scheme. He says, Dear Punk News Podcast, great first episode, M. New companion, great idea. Then he says, Adam White and his angry barber. Oh, I guess this is Nick's Get Rich Quick Scheme. Adam White and his angry barber. Adam goes into his barber wearing a wire, gets a trim, and talks to his barber about what it's like doing the Punk News Podcast. America needs this, and Canada owes us this. From sweet Nick. There you go.
I'm going to see my exceedingly angry barber on Friday. So I could absolutely pull this off. Although I am afraid that in the era where we are we're very sensitive and we're canceling people left and right, I don't think my barber would last the scrutiny of the internet for longer than a few minutes. He would be destroyed.
Adam, should we give barbers free passes when it comes to political correctness and social niceties? Because they've got a hard job. They've got to cut. I mean, can you imagine cutting 20 haircuts a day? It would drive me insane. And you got to deal with pricks. And so you got to be tough. You got to let stuff bounce off you. Should we give barbers a free pass when it comes to social niceties and I guess what we would say modern political lingo?
Well, see, I having grown up in the Italian diaspora here, and I'm sure this is pretty similar for you too, John. I don't know if you went to an old Italian barber as a child, where you would go in and there'd be a man that even when you were a kid seemed like they were 500 years old, that was going to give you the same haircut every day for the rest of your life. And as you were in there waiting for your turn to go up and get that same haircut, you would sit there as a little confused boy next to the giant rack of Playboys that was just a normal ass thing to be in the lobby of your old man Italian barbershop. Because that was very awkward for me. I didn't know what to do. I'm like, I'm not sure if I should be looking in the direction of this magazine rack that is clearly not meant for me. I don't know, John. Barbers are like a weird experience in my life. I feel like it took years before I realized that I could find a man that was not, let's say, 75 years old to cut my hair.
I want if an older dude's good at his craft, I definitely want the old dude cutting my hair.
No, my problem is that
he's not good at his craft.
Well, my family has a theory that as age overtook him, he started to get more crooked and weird. And you'd go out of obligation, and then you'd come out of there and be like, this is not really what I wanted. Anyways, yeah, I'm all for this get rich quick scheme in any case. John, it's playoff time for me. This happens every year where we have
get hockey.
Well, you know, I'm not in terms of hockey, but in terms of hair.
Is hair playoff? I don't know what you're talking about.
So you are aware in hockey of the idea of having playoff hair, right? Where these guys they feel that they're cursed if they shave or if they, you know, cut their hair or become any more presentable when it's the playoff season and they're in contention, because doing so would jinx you. So you just let your hair grow out and you grow these like disgusting mullets as the only way of, you know, achieving hockey success. Well, every time at about this year is like the most busy time of year for my office, and we always have some big horrible deadline that we're making something that has to launch on a certain date. And just inevitably I get to that launch date and I realize that like I have the playoff hair, where I've foregone all social graces and all, you know, grooming, because there's no time in the crunch. And then I come out the other side looking like I've been living in a cave, and that's right now. Anyways, though.
Well, fair enough. And here's a question. Adam was talking about Playboys in the public sphere. Whenever you go to the airport, like, they have like porno mags, like straight up, like right there with the rest of the airport mag. Like, it'll be like, you know, like Home and Cooking. It'll be like Women's Day, and then it'll be like raunchy sex acts, you know, 17 or something. Who is this guy that buys like these like hardcore porno mags and like reads them on the plane? Like, because if I was like on the plane, I would like sit next to a guy's like, and it's not just like, you know, Playboy. It's relatively instant. Like, it's topless girls, so, you know, whatever. But like, they got some filthy ones at the airport. Like, who is this dude that's like reading the filthy porno mags on the airplane? And what would you do if you're sitting next to him? Like, you know what I mean?
Oof. Get up and leave. Just get a parachute and just go. That's it. Running away.
Oh, we still have more mail. I'm sorry. Oh. This is from Math of Punks, and here's what Math of Punks has to say. Hey, gents, I love the show, but for the first time, you really hacked me off in episode 483. When talking punk rock going club shows, John stated, "I don't care about the restarts." No one challenges this arrogant, dismissive comment. All three of you should care about the restarts. Tom, you gave their last record a 4-star review. Adam, they have a Canadian singer and bass player. John, you like ferocious, intelligent, 100% blazing punk. You should care. This cocky approach is unusual and doesn't befit you. 483 episodes, and this is the first time to really bug me. Pretty good going, but come on. Dismissing a band like this is not respectful. Best wishes from Math of Punks. Well, listen, I will... I did dismiss them. Maybe I was wrong to do so. I've got the Restarts MDC split CD. I think it's a CD. Yeah, it is. It is a CD. So I will go check. I will give the Restarts another chance. I can be moved. I have nothing against them.
As I don't remember that conversation, I don't feel the need to defend myself in it. But I will also go check this band out.
Well, you can always do that podcast at Punk News. Math, I will check out the restarts next time, but you can always do that podcast at punknews.org.
John, I did it again. For a brief hour.
You woke up covered in blood with a bloody knife.
No. The opposite is, I think I proved myself to be a cool dad for a little bit. So I don't know if anyone remembers. I probably told a story on the podcast about how I did this kind of thing before, but I pulled it off again, and I'm really stoked because I think that I am in the small window in my daughter's life where I can be impressive to her, because at a certain point, because she's seven, right? So at a certain point, she's going to start to become a teenager and then will reflexively hate me for probably entirely justifiable reasons. But right now, right, she's old enough that we can do stuff, but not so old enough to be embarrassed by me. So
I can't believe your daughter's seven already, dude.
I can't fucking believe my daughter's seven. But so I went and I took her on a rock and roll adventure on Saturday last, the Saturday that we just finished. And it is the second of these that I've done with her, and it was wonderful. And I just want to tell you what I did. And I feel that, like, I'm curious for as a Toronto area person of the punk persuasion, if you think I did a good job here. So
okay.
So me and the kid, we leave Niagara early afternoon. We drive up to Toronto. We stash the car somewhere near the corner of let's say College and Spadina, somewhere in that area, just to be really specific to all of our listeners who really care about where the streets in Toronto are. So then we wandered over to Sneaks. So there's a pretty infamous rock and roll bar, John, that is in Toronto called Sneaky D's. And they've had a lot of interaction over the years with various members of the Toronto punk scene, of various members of the Toronto underground music community. Like, Fucked Up has had meals there named after them and stuff like that. And they are famous in Toronto for being the place where you would go and get like a giant plate of nachos. So me and my daughter, we went and we got a giant plate of rock and roll nachos while we were in Sneaky D's eating. At some point there was like a commotion and some guy had to be like thrown out and everyone started yelling at him. And this was just spectacular to me. My daughter got a milkshake that was probably at least like 3 liters. It was gigantic. So then we leave from the cool rock and roll bar where she's full of sugar and cheese, I guess. And we wandered over to The Beguiling, which is a comic store that's right on the edge of Kensington Market there. And The Beguiling is a comic store that all the dudes from the band that is not just dudes, the two of the three individuals from Tough Age work in that store. So we go in there. She buys a bunch of kind of like neat for 7-year-olds graphic novels. And then we go down into the basement of the comic book store to watch punk bands play until she falls asleep on her feet in this just like, unlicensed, people are bringing their own beer cans kind of thing. And we go down in the basement and we watched a bunch of bands. And this is the second time that we've done that. The last time that we did it, we saw Woolworm and Necking, which are two great kind of Vancouver area Mint Records bands that we're in. This time we saw the cassette release show from a band called Motorists. That is Jesse from Tough Age and Craig from Feel All Right's new little power pop band. And the best part of this is that my daughter, the week before, she had to take the owl home from Brownies. So what this is my daughter's in Brownies, which is like the thing below girl guides in Canada. So if you're like not old enough to be a girl guide, or as we call it, like a girl scout, John,
Girl Scout.
Yeah, Girl Scout. So whatever, I don't know. John, I don't know how familiar you are with various levels of the Girl Scouting program. I don't know why you would know this.
You know, I haven't referenced it recently, so I'm not as sharp as I used to be when it comes to Girl Scout.
Well, so anyway, yeah. So if you're too young to be a Girl Guide, which is the Canadian version of a Girl Scout, I guess, you are a brownie. So she is a brownie. And so they have like some sort of owl motif that goes on there. And every week, one of them gets to take home this ratty stuffed owl and bring it on some adventure.
I think it's like a live owl that they like take care of.
No. My daughter's telling me about like everyone's adventures with the owl. And it's like, oh, someone took the owl sledding and someone took the owl to the grocery store, you know, and someone took the owl to grandma's house. And I'm like, fuck this. Like, we're going to do some cool shit with the owl. So we took the owl to Sneaky D's and we got a picture of the owl with a giant milkshake and a huge plate of nachos. And then we took the owl to the basement punk show. And my daughter like went and like stood behind the drum kit with the drummer of Motorists and got a picture of her and the owl and the drummer. And then this owl was there at the punk show, like living the fucking lifestyle the whole time. And we took pictures of all this. And she's going to bring it back to Girl Guides and be like, yeah, you took the owl to grandma's house. I took the owl to the basement punk show.
That's cool, Adam.
So I feel very accomplished as cool dad right now, because that's not going to last. Like, I can only do this for a few years, and then she's going to be like, I'm not going to a show with you, you asshole. So I don't want that to happen. So, Em, did I do okay?
Yes, you did wonderful. And always, like, promise her nachos and milkshakes. She'll go anywhere with you, like, no matter what. Like, teenage years, like, free food. That's the way.
We've done the last time that we did this too. We were the waiter that we had at Sneaks tried to like scare us off of like the gnarliest of the nachos that were there. So I don't know how aware you are of the Sneaky D's menu, but there's a pretty famous nacho plate that they do there that's called the King's Crown, which is like an enormous plate of nachos that has like a thing of guac on top of it that's like the size of a human fist. And it's probably like, I'm sure it's like 5,000 calories worth of nachos. Like, it's like a bad amount of food. And I remember we went in last time and I was like, hey, can me and this 6-year-old eat the King's Crown? And he kind of gave me this look like, no, like 6 people eat the King's Crown. You 2 don't. And so instead, he shepherded us over to like the, you know, get this little vegetarian nacho plate and don't get the insane one, you dummies. But this time we had like the doesn't give a fuck super punk waitress with the nose ring. And I'm like, can me and the kid eat the King's Crown? And she's like, yeah, like that's the best. Why wouldn't you? And I was like, okay. I'm like, they said not to last time. And she gave me this look like whoever served you was doesn't actually work here or something. Like, it was, she was incredulous. So anyways, yeah. So eat chips with your children. So Motorists, let's talk about them, because I'm going to play a song for them before we get into the next section here. So Motorists is a power pop, I guess, group. It's 3 folks that used to be in a bunch of Calgary bands together that no longer live in Calgary. They live in Toronto now. So vocalist is Craig Boehner, who used to be in Feel All Right. Matt Leroyd is playing bass with him. Craig's on guitar. And then Jesse Locke from Tough Age and from the Chandra Band and from Simply Saucer and the Rotten Column and fucking 500 other bands. Jesse was playing drums for them. So they have a limited run of cassettes that they just put out on Jesse's tape label, which is called Planet of the Tapes. And it's called From the Wreckage, which is the first of these little EPs. You can get it on Bandcamp too if you're a bummer. But yeah, it's fun. Jesse kind of like likened the band to Punk Sloan, and given Craig's vocals, they kind of have like a Punk Sloan vibe. So I'm gonna play something by them, and then we'll come back. So I'm gonna play. Instant Replay, which is the last song on the From the Wreckage tape from Motorists, and then we'll come back. And we are back. John, we got a whole bunch of stories lined up about the disease, about the plague, about the
plague,
about the coronavirus, which as we record this, like to place this podcast in a particular place and time. And I feel that we should do this because we don't know how crazy shit's going to get between now and when I actually post this episode. Right. So we're going to go and we're going to talk about like how this has affected the music community. But then by the time we post this, you know, they'll have like evacuated half the earth and it's going to seem really dated. So we are posting this on what is it? Wednesday, March 11th is when we are recording. Less than an hour ago, President Trump banned all travel from Europe into the United States. What else? We just learned that Tom Hanks of all people has the coronavirus. So this is our reality as we sit here right now. So we're still at least in the realm of where everything is surreal and strange. I guess that's how I want to put it. As someone who's not personally affected by this yet, everything just seems really fucking surreal to me right now. So
yeah, I thought it was kind of like people overreacting, but like honestly, like it seems pretty crazy to tell you the truth, man. I mean, it seems pretty real crazy. So, but is it overreacting or not? Because I mean, like news now more than ever, you can't. I'm definitely not one of these guys. You can't believe the news because I firmly believe in the news. But that being said, on one hand, I got people saying it's not that big of a deal. You know, you've got a bigger chance of getting SARS or whatever. But on the other hand, it's like people are like Italy is shut down. Literally, like Italy, the country is shut down. You know what I mean? You can't fly out of Europe to USA. You know, so I don't know, man. Like see, and honestly, like I never even heard of the coronavirus 2 weeks ago or something, and now it's like. The World Health Organization literally has labeled it a pandemic, which I think is like the worst, you know? So, I mean, it seems pretty serious, Adam. I don't know.
So, I mean, I have a personal story about this. I'll jump to it in a sec. But like, so,
do a personal story about the coronavirus?
Well, about my reaction to it. No, I'm fine. Me and mine are all unaffected by the coronavirus as far as I know. I do have a little bit of a sniffle right now and it's concerning me, but that's it. But like, so like, up in your neck of the woods, like, are people getting weird?
Well, here's a fun story. So I live around Toronto, but like where I actually live, we have like a very small town, like maybe 500 people, and everyone's very antisocial in like the best of times. So like, you know, you'll see the odd person like when you go get your mail at like the P.O. boxes, but like that's kind of it. So like in like my immediate vicinity, everyone's just kind of carrying on. But then like talking to friends and stuff, like one of my friends, her sister's boyfriend's mom just got back from a cruise and then she developed a fever. The mom developed a fever and had to get tested for coronavirus. And like, luckily she didn't have it and everything was fine and everyone's okay. But like, it was just kind of like, that was really, close, you know, in that way. But like, again, when we drive to get, like groceries and stuff, like there's places that are out of toilet paper and like hand sanitizer and everything. So it's just kind of, it's ramping up, I think. Because I read today, too, that right now there's more than 121,000 cases in 118 countries. So, like, it seems to be spreading, like, pretty quickly. And, you know, so that's kind of that. And just being aware of everything, especially with healthcare workers. There was one case in... I think it was in Hamilton, where an oncologist went to Hawaii and came back, and she was around cancer patients, and she tested positive, but she went home and self-quarantined and everything. So I think it's just the early stages of what could be mass panic, but hopefully isn't, because swine flu was also declared a pandemic by the World Health Organization, and that wasn't like too bad.
I think that I'm pretty good at not letting the worry affect me about this kind of stuff. At least that's what I thought. So yesterday night, we as a family went to Costco last night. This is the most punk thing that I'm going to tell anyone. So we went to Costco last night because we needed like things that we buy at Costco. So we were wandering around doing our groceries or whatever. And we had heard all the stories about there being like runs on toilet paper, where people just buying out all the toilet paper, which I don't entirely understand. Like, this is that where if you really had to like to, you know, to hunker down, like that is the concern, is that you need like months of toilet paper to be stocked up.
You don't blows my mind. They didn't even invent toilet paper until like 1900. You know, that blows my mind.
Yeah, I guess. So we're in there and we're like, we kind of want to go buy a thing of toilet paper because that's what you do at Costco at a normal day. But we don't want to look like one of those like, you know, panicky maniacs. So we're going to have to somehow play this cool. So we walk over to the back, and clearly the whole back of the store has been reconfigured into like toilet paper distribution, you know, ground zero. And some woman ran up to the Costco like kid that was moving the skid out there and asked like, how many of these can we take? And the guy's like, he kind of like laughed. He's like, you could buy the whole skid if you want. Like no one cares. Like, but buy as much toilet paper as you probably need. And it was just, it was strange seeing that. But we go to check out of there. My kids have not eaten because we went right after work, and they were chipping for food. So we brought them through like the infamous kind of like Costco food court thing to get them a hot dog and french fries or something like that. So we go, and my wife goes and buys this food with them and sits at the little food courty picnic table area at the front of the Costco. Now, that area is fucking packed and it's all close together, and it is a badly designed place. But she goes there. So I take our cart out, load up our car with all the groceries. I come back. They're right in the middle of this sea of humans that are sitting there stuffing their faces. And I muscle my way into where they are. I squeeze between all these people. You basically can't get to where they are without either you touching someone with your butt or other people's butts touching you. It is way too close for comfort. We get in there and we go, and I sit down with my kids, and my kids are being kids, which means they're like leisurely half eating their food at a pace that is infuriating at the best of times, and just like touching everything in between. And I'm sitting there in this pile of people as my kids like really unhygienically pretend to eat. And then it occurred to me that like, ugh, like this place is gross. There's people around me there's other children that are around me that are coughing. There's people that are touching me and all this. And I had, John, I had a legitimate fucking panic attack, which is not a thing that happens to me, but it happened to me. We're sitting there, and I guess just like watching all of this like stuff in the news for the, you know, for the past week or whatever that I've been paying attention to it, and being in that crushed group of people that were like alternatively being gross and coughing on each other and whatever. And just like at a certain point, I just like got up and I'm like, I have to go outside. I'm like, I can't be here. This is, I'm sorry. And I just like left my wife.
So you left your kids by themselves?
I left my wife with my kids. Well, my wife had walked away to go do something, and as soon as she got back, I'm like, you watch them, I have to go. And I just had to go like be outside in the open air. And for the next like hour afterwards, I was just fucked up. And I came home kind of shocked, because like I'm not the kind of person that has a panic attack about anything, but I had a fucking panic attack about this. And I don't know if it was just that like the Costco food court is gross, or if it is this pandemic worry is something I've internalized way more than I am letting on that I've internalized it. But it
was, honestly, Adam, it was weird. I realize you're trying to be serious and actually touch on a true chord that strikes with all of us. But honestly, if you're eating at the Costco food court, you got bigger problems than a coronavirus pandemic.
I wasn't eating. I was feeding my children the food. There's a total difference. I have certain standards for what comes into my body. But anyways, how does this play into the punk rock universe? Let's loop it in because it touched on a whole bunch of music stuff over the past week. We don't need to read all these stories verbatim, but let's talk about the cancellations that have cropped up so far. So the big one, I don't know which of these is the big one. I feel that the first of them was South by Southwest. So the big annual music festival, digital conference, you know, the 3 weeks of just humanity that pours into Austin, Texas every year was canceled. It was slated to start on March 16th. The city actually ordered them to pull the plug on it out of fears for the coronavirus. But this was something that was so close to the start of the event that it has affected a ton of artists because a lot of people were in transit. Bands will book tours around getting down to South By and back. Tons of bands from England come over and play every year, so a lot of those people were in transit. There was a lot of artists that don't necessarily make a whole ton of money doing their stuff that were affected by that. Not to mention the people that actually travel into the city to go see the shows and like the audience and all that. So South By was the first one. And in a way,
and Adam, no refunds for ticket purchasers,
no refunds as well. Okay. So also that, that was number one. Number two, and the one that I guess I have less sympathy for, maybe because, I don't know, we don't have any sympathy for them. So the second one was Coachella. So Coachella was slated to, April, 2 weekends in April, I guess is what Coachella would have been in. And they are moving it to October. So again, maybe not as let's say artist punishing as the South By closure, because, you know, I'm sure that like Rage Against the Machine and My Chemical Romance and, you know, the Chemical Brothers, they're all going to be fine with their show moved. But, you know, there's still a lot of people that I'm sure have like unrefundable flights and stuff like that, that were planning to head out for that. So Coachella was then canceled. And in the meantime, you had a ton of various touring artists that were or were not pulling the plug on what they were doing. The ones that I think they were the most prominent ones in the news to pull the plug on their stuff was Pearl Jam. So they canceled a big tour. Earlier, Green Day canceled their European tour that they're about to head out on.
An hour ago, They Might Be Giants pushed their entire tour back to the fall. A few hours ago, Bikini Kill canceled their entire Northwest tour.
And I know that there's certain bands that are in the midst of tours at the moment that I've seen have to post like pretty awkward Facebook messages where they say like, okay, like, you know, we're like, there's, you know, we're in a van and we're in the middle of, you know, we're down in wherever, Idaho, playing shows. What are they going to do? They're like, I guess we're going to keep playing shows, but, you know, please don't come if you're sick, because, you know, they're there. They've crossed the border in some cases. They're in the midst of it. They can't just pull the plug. So it is a strange time. This is the most like selfish feeling that I've had, is that I find I keep checking back the few news sites that I pay attention to. John, there's sites that post about music news, eh? Like it's interesting. We should get on that. I've been checking back on a few of those sites every once in a while and just saying like, oh, I hope this festival I want to go to isn't canceled, right? Like I'm dreading the statement from some summer thing that I wanted to go to being like, nope, that's out. It's like the rug's been pulled out from under me. As if
along those lines, Punk Rock Bowling issued a statement today saying we're not canceling for the time being because rumors were spreading around. So similar to that end.
Yeah, I feel that like by worrying that I'm not going to get to go to some music festival in June or August or whatever, I'm selfishly putting my own health over the herd immunity here. Cause I get the whole argument whereas they say, like, if you are a healthy person, you still also don't want to get this virus, even though you will certainly pull through, because you don't want to put added strain on the healthcare system that should be focusing on the people that are actually vulnerable. Like, I get that. But there's still a part of me that is selfishly like, no, don't cancel my thing. I don't know. What should the read on this be? Like, is this just like, did we just ride the wave and just watch mouth agape as the music world is impacted by this? Should we have particular sympathy for bands that don't get to go be cool at South by Southwest? Like, should we have a reaction at all? Should we just hide? What do we do?
Well, we should have sympathy for me because I was planning on going to the Netherlands next month, and I don't think that's going to happen now. But broader than that, listen, a lot of bands, I mean, honestly, more than ever before, you have a very small number of rich, 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 rich bands, and they'll be fine no matter what. And then at the bottom of the pyramid, you've got a million bands that need ad cash to get by. I know on Twitter I follow a lot of guys in medium. They make it public, so I'll make it public. Joey of Downtown Boy says he's going to have problems making his rent because he can't play shows right now. John Day Domenici of Jeff Rosenstock and Bob the Music Industry said he's going to have problems making rent because he can't do shows now. And it really is an interesting dynamic. At one point, I see a lot of people saying, you shouldn't shut down cities. You shouldn't shut down so-and-so. We need to make money. We need to get paid. And on the other side, I see really – It's not even a political thing. These people on the same end of the political spectrum. I see people say, how dare you make me go to work? I don't want to get sick. It's cruel and sick of you to force me to risk to get sick while you're staying quarantined or safe at your own house or whatever. So it really is an issue that comes down to not to politics. It comes down to, I guess, self-assessment of how risky the coronavirus is. And honestly, before today, I was like, man, this ain't no big thing. But then I was planning to go to New York next Friday to see a concert. And now I'm a little worried, honestly. You know what I mean? I'm a little worried. I really want to go to Punk Rock Bowling, and if it's happening, then I'm probably going to go. But, I mean, listen, man, there's people in my life that are over 65, you know what I mean? And so, I feel so bad if I got any of them sick. I'd feel horrible, you know? So I hopefully in like 2 or 3 weeks we'll have a better understanding of where it's at, because the news is so inflammatory on any side about this issue. Like I said, Italy is literally shut down. Italy is not a third world country. So if Italy shut down, then man, that is somewhat concerning. So anyway, for the bands, I do feel bad for them. Buy their CDs and t-shirts. And it goes back to the, Spotify doesn't help out bands. So if you want to be a glutton and get everything on Spotify, then you need to find support your band some other ways. Otherwise, bands are broke, and frankly, it does harm the art when bands are completely broke. I'm not saying bands need to be rich, but if an artist is completely broke, it makes being an artist a lot less fun, and maybe someone who could have been an artist will go into selling used cars, because at least you don't have to worry about paying your rent every month.
Yeah, used car salesman. Bruh. Or something. Sorry. So I guess the one silver lining of this whole pandemic is that Scotty from Tank Crimes made a power violence song about hygiene.
And not only that, it was the label's most popular song in like 4 years, like debut wise.
So what's the skinny on this? Tell the people.
Tank Crimes is a record label out in Oakland. They do punk and metal, mostly metal played by punks. And Scotty Tank Crimes used to be in Deadfall and a couple of other bands. And he recorded this in like one day. He did a 75-second track, or maybe he's doing like 60 seconds, about why you should wash your hands. And it became a, quote, viral hit. And people thought it was funny and humorous and also informative. And I agree. And what did you think of Scotty Tank Crimes' Power Violence track about good hygiene?
I thought it was perfect. It's just, it's nice to see something like about the virus that isn't scary, you know, and doesn't like really freak you out. It's like, you know, they're having fun with it while being informative, not poking fun at it, not like kind of poking the bear, you know, just like, here you go. We're going to have fun with it. This is something we have to live with for however long. Might as well, you know, make it a good existence. So all for it.
How sage of M. This is our existence. So we might as well make it a good time. How wise, and how true.
Thank you.
All right. Well, someone play a song, I guess, and we will roll on here.
And you got a track?
I do. So the song is called Payback, and it's by London-based DIY, like, feminist punk band Dream Nails, and it's off their upcoming self-titled album, so it's going to be out April 3rd, so check them out.
All right, we're back. It's John. It is the perennial Australia hour on the Punk News Podcast, where we talk about the only two bands from Australia.
Oh, AC/DC and Rose Tattoo, or AC/DC and Men at Work.
Either or. Did you plan this? Do these two bands always have news at the exact same time?
Actually, Adam, I mildly contemplated that, but I had like a wisp of a thought about that. But I'm glad you highlighted that. So, as we all know, the chats are from Australia. Amo and the Sniffers are from Australia. I love Amo and the Sniffers. I like the chats a lot. However, with the chats, there are secret machinations behind the scene. The chats actually have some connection to a major label. Are they funded? Are they technically signed to a major label through a ghost record label? Who knows? Or shell record label, rather. I guess as an attorney, I probably should use the legal term, the ghost record label, the shell record label. So that's kind of a bummer, but we'll talk about the chats in a second. But it is interesting, Adam, that we do see Amel and Chats news almost anytime there's significant news for both of them. They almost both release news in the same week. And that could just be, you know, they kind of came up a little bit together and the chats were a little bit after Amel. So maybe when one of them posts news, someone's like, oh, let's post our news too, because people are talking about Australia stuff, and let's catch that flame. And it works. Or it could be the paranoid thing that I've talked about before, that, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you're wrong. Are there secret machinations behind the scenes with regards to Amel and the Sniffers? We do know they have some kind of connection to some major label or something, but I don't know if they were funded by a major label and aren't anymore, or they just had talks. But the chats definitely are signed or have by a link of companies are signed to a major label, and they kind of keep that secret.
I find I can't get too worked up about it at all at this point, if only because, like, I don't feel like the major labels have all that much power like they did in the 90s. Like, you'd really worry about this, or you know, there'd be a lot of, like, online hand-wringing about it back in the era where there was, I guess, an us versus them, you know, a little bit of a class warfare, financial distinction between the majors and the indies and all that. But at this point, it's like you could be a band signed to a major label and, you know, purportedly be a fairly big rock band, and you still make probably zero money and are in debt.
I don't worry about it from the band credibility perspective. I've always had the perspective. There's a million great bands on major labels, and they're great. And being a band on an indie label doesn't mean you're good either. You know, the Melvins were on a major label, amazing. Ramones were on a major label, amazing. What concerns me is the secrecy of it. And that being said, like the Chats and the Regrets and the Amel and the Sniffers all played very DIY spots when they first toured Philadelphia and the East Coast of the USA. You know, and so like Live Nation, Ticketmaster, they own all the venues aside from tiny bars, they own them all. And ticket prices are out of control, and you can only use certain things there, and you have to sell certain kinds of alcohol, and there has to be Budweiser or whatever plastered all over. Fine. I mean, not fine, but fine. They've taken, you know, the bigger show arena and torched it. That's how it's going to be. Well, at least I've got my DIY spot where we can throw SummerSlam Rank 4. At least I've got my DIY spot where we can do the Punk News Prom, or where we can do the Spring Slam Down, have fun and have a good time and not be controlled by alcohol companies or not be controlled by ticket companies or Ticketmaster or Live Nation. But then the major labels are starting to creep into those spaces to test them out, see what can we do in there? How can we influence and control the market through the DIY spaces? So I've got nothing against the bands. I've got something against the machinations behind them. Why are they now sneaking into my area and not letting me know they're there? And I realize so far, nothing really terrible has seemed to happen. But then again, when music streaming popped up, it was all cool. Everyone's making money. And how quickly did that turn? So I'm distrustful of someone that is secretive and sneaky when they don't need to be secretive and sneaky, unless it's beneficial for them to be secretive and sneaky.
I'm generally a fan of transparency in these matters. And anyways, like I don't see the benefit of hiding some of that stuff. And I'm not super tuned into kind of like what's going on in like I don't know. Like, is there a particular chat subreddit that you hang out on that shares all of the all the major label conspiracy theories?
Well, it's not a conspiracy theory. If you go to their website, at the very bottom, it's got connections to Universal Music Group.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, does that bother you at all? And as a younger person who didn't have to live through the 90s authenticity wars, does a band's label affiliation matter all that much to you?
It used to. When I started like listening to punk music, it was like, oh, you know, these guys can't be punk because they're getting so much money, you know, or whatever. And then just kind of step back from that. And it's like, well, you know, do I like the music? Does it have like a message? Is their message, you know, being like, are they practicing what they preach? And I think that that's a big thing with like the major versus indie labels thing is like, you know, bands on indie labels are more like, or seen more like, you know, they have more integrity, and bands on major labels aren't. But like, there are bands that are on indie labels that don't have like any integrity, and there are bands on major labels who like stick true to their guns and everything. So I think it's hard to, yeah, you have to judge it on a case by case basis, I think. But yeah, I agree. There's no point in like hiding around it, or, you know, oh no, we're not on a major label, we're on this thing. And then turns out they're on a major label. I don't really see the point in that, again, unless like it's something nefarious and just like slimy.
I'm always curious about whether my particular preoccupation with labels is just sort of some remnant of the wars that we thought we were fighting in like 1995, and it really has very little to do with how younger people, I guess, choose to consume their media. Not that you have to answer for all younger people. But you kind of do. You kind of do on this show. just like how Ricky, our past person, has to answer for all arsonists. So, John, that's how you do it. You punch them when they're not here anymore. And they.
That's what we do. We sneak attack and run away.
I mean, did you want to talk about the these pieces of audio at all? The chat.
Yes, I do.
The chat's video to me is. I mean, I get that they have a shtick, but I appreciate really dumb punk songs, and this is a really dumb punk song, so I'm down with that. Amo always sounds totally fine whenever I check in with them for
totally the fine. You'd be totally awesome.
Yeah, but awesome in a way where I will listen to them for the purpose of this show. I will mentally register, oh, this band is pretty good, I should go listen to more of this band. And then I don't. And then they show up on the show after a while. So I really feel like I should do that at this point.
You and Tom have like this weird aversion to Amo and the Sniffers. Amo and the Sniffers rule. Their last album ruled. I've seen them live. They rule. I mean, and plus they're snarky and funny, and they've got an edge, but they're not like jerks just to be jerks. They rule. I mean, Amo, if you want to talk about punk in 2020. Amo and the Sniffers. And if you ask me, they're doing everything right. They put out two EPs, well, technically three. No, they're three EPs, but technically four. And each one got better than the one before, and they were sharp and snappy and funny and cool. They put out the album. The album was everything twice as fast, and it was awesome. And so how do you follow up with a cool album? You kind of do the misdirect. You put out a live EP, and you guys know me. I love live albums, so I am so excited for this. And plus, it's promoting their live tour this spring, which, man, I really hope happens now. That's kind of a thing, isn't it? Because they're coming from Australia. Wow. So anyways, Amo, I mean, their lyrics are funny. Their lyrics are sharp, but also they're somewhat political, but they're not strictly political. They're also very personal to a degree. And they're sometimes weird, and they're honest. And in their songs, they're not always the nice guy. Like, there's a song called I Want Control, and it's Amy singing, I want control. Like, not even – that's a good thing to do. She's saying, I want to be selfish, and I want control. And I think that's a cool and interesting line. And I think they're a great band, and they're doing everything awesome. And people need to get on board. I mean, honestly, people were supposed to get on board last year. But if you haven't gotten on board yet, you need to get on board now, because the band is awesome. The Chats, I liked them. Then I didn't like them so much. Now I like them again. When I first heard them, I thought they were cool and funny and they rocked. Then I went to the show and I did a bullshit thing. I went to the show and there was a lot of buzz behind them. And it was so bro-y. I mean, it was it was a bro-y show I've been to in like 10 years just because I don't go a whole lot of bro-y shows anymore. But it was so bro-y. And I'm like, oh, my God. And that's not the band's fault. You know, Sublime is one of the best bands ever, but their audience is terrible. That's not Sublime's fault. But I kind of held that against them just because I'm like, oh, my God, these people are obnoxious and I hate them. And but then they keep putting out these funny videos. And even though I think their videos might not be cheap to make, they make them look like they're cheap to make. And they're done in like the classic, you know, late 80s, early 90s, funny Beastie Boys style. And they're just hilarious videos. And the songs are snappy and funny and good. I don't know if they're groundbreaking, but they're a very good band. And I'm enjoying them. And I'm going to see them come around again with Mean Jeans.
There we go.
M, aim on chats. What are you thinking?
All right. So, with bands, I like to like listen to them how they're on the album and then like find a live video of them and everything. So with Amel, like when I listen to the like recording, it's like, you know, it's cool, they have energy, they sound really like really good, but then I watch the video for Control that was on the article, and like that just like blew me away. That was so good. And it's like, I, you know, now I want to see them live and want to listen to them more, you know, than I did before. So, you know, I'd be interested in listening to or buying the live album for sure.
And, yeah, Adam. Yeah.
And with the chats, I love their videos. Their videos are awesome. And then, like, the Dine and Dash one, like, it was fun and, like, just funny and just, like, great. And then in the YouTube description, it said who the waiter and the old man at the end were. So, like, the waiter is Jeff Corbett, and he's from, like, 6 Feet Hick and Shifting Sands. And I didn't know who they were, so I looked them up. And, you know, like the first band, he's with his brother in that one. And I saw a video of them live and they're just like hopping around. And I don't know if it was him or his brother, but one of the guys has like his, like pulls his leg up and stuff, like in a really inhuman way. And it's just like nuts. So that was really cool. And the other one is, like an indie band. So, and then the old man, he's called Mr. Democracy Manifest. And then the whole thing at the end, when he gets arrested, it's like recreating the video that, someone shot of him actually getting arrested and saying like all these different things. So he was like recreating that. And I thought that was hilarious because I thought it was really funny, like without the context, and then like found out the context. It was like, oh, okay. So I guess like, he has a website, and on the website, he's like, hey guys, I'm still alive. You know, I'm not all these things that you journalists wrote about me. I'm just like a normal person. I'm still alive. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Very cool. John,
Adam,
what else do you want to touch on that happened this next week here? So there's a big legal issue that seems right up your alley.
Oh, go ahead, Adam.
No, what were you going to say? That is now
concluded. I mean, this is, unless they appeal to the Supreme Court of the USA, which, well, the Supreme Court probably wouldn't even hear it if they did. But
yeah, right. So this is not a punk story, people, but this is one of these like. One of these classic stories of modern rock and roll. So, John, give him the skinny.
All right. So Led Zeppelin's got a song called Stairway to Heaven. Adam, have you heard that song?
I had a high school dance once.
And then there's a band called Spirit. Spirit's got a song called Taurus. And literally for decades, like there's been like, these kind of rumors don't exist anymore, but in like the 60s, 70s, and 80s before the internet, there were all these like weird rumors that used to go around. Like, Adam, you're the last one that existed before the internet came along was that Marilyn Manson was actually the kid from the Wonder Years. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, before the internet, everything was great. I It's like you can't, like these days, you just pull out Google and you check in 2 seconds and you have an answer to that stupid thing. But back then we had to sit around and contemplate that shit for like I first heard that one of those rumors. I think I was at like a Boy Scout camp or something like that. And like, so not only did we not have the internet at all to go find that out, but we were literally in the woods. So we had to just sit there with our own thoughts and go like, wow, really?
What would you do with saying attitude? Anyways, for years and years and years, there was this thing, Led Zeppelin ripped off Spirit's Taurus. And if you listen to the two songs, they sort of sound similar in the intro. And by sound, I don't even mean the notes are the same. I mean the sonic textures are somewhat similar. And you can't copyright sonic textures. And sometimes you can't even copyright notes depending on the composition of the notes. Anyways, Spirit had literally like 4.5 decades to sue Led Zeppelin, and they didn't. Then most or all of the Spirit guys passed away, and one of the Spirit guys' sons or even nephew, I think it was actually a nephew, sued Led Zeppelin for copyright infringement. And you say, John, how can they sue Led Zeppelin for copyright infringement 4.5 decades after it occurred? I thought the statute of limitations of copyright infringement was only 4 years. Well, it's because Led Zeppelin remastered and re-released the discography, reopening that can of worms. The nephew's attorney saw that opportunity and struck. So they sued Led Zeppelin again for copyright infringement for Taurus. And I suspect what he was hoping was going to happen is Led Zeppelin would just give him a couple of mil to go away and would not, you know, basically destroy their entire reissue campaign. Probably the fourth or fifth most valuable music property in the world after the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and a couple – Rush, surprisingly, Michael Jackson and a few others. However, Led Zeppelin did the right thing and they fought it, and I'm glad they fought it. It went to a jury trial, and Led Zeppelin won in the jury trial, finding that there, in fact, was no copyright infringement. So, M, that had to be the end of the story, right?
No.
Right. So, of course – the guy from Spear, what the hell's his name? The guy's name was Michael Skidmore. He filed an appeal, and that went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Of course, the Ninth Circuit is the circuit that's in California, and it's a federal case. And Ninth Circuit has this weird thing where they've got almost an intermediate appeal, whereas if you appeal a case, you don't go directly to the Court of Appeals. You go to like an intermediate appeal, intermediary appeal. And Taurus won at the intermediary appeal on the basis that the instructions to the jury were flawed and therefore we need to have a new trial. So, of course, Led Zeppelin said, well, I guess we got to have a new trial. Let's have a new trial. Isn't that exactly what happened, Adam?
Is that exactly what happened, John?
No, it's not. Led Zeppelin appealed again to a full 9-judge panel. So the attorneys went to battle in front of 9 judges. And let me tell you, Adam, that's intense, man. I've been in front of 3 judges a couple of times in the Court of Appeal. And actually, well, mine wasn't that intense because it wasn't like broadcast or televised or anything. But it's still kind of intense when you got 3 judges asking you questions. I can only imagine having 9 judges asking questions about stuff. So anyways, in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal, they issued the ruling earlier this week. And what was the ruling? The ruling was that there was no error in the jury instructions, meaning Led Zeppelin wins, meaning this literally 50-year battle is over. Led Zeppelin did not rip off Taurus. And also, there was a lot of news sites made a big deal about this, as if this was the central holding of the case. This was not the central holding of the case. It was dicta, but it is nevertheless relatively important. In the Ninth Circuit, they overturned the inverse ratio rule, which is a stupid rule to begin with. The inverse ratio rule was that if you could show access to original material that was alleged to have been copied, then your burden to show striking similarity is lower. That makes no sense. I mean, especially in the YouTube era. But just because you have access to something doesn't necessarily make it more likely that you're going to copy it. It just means it's easier to show access. So that is no longer the rule, which is right. None of the other circuits use that rule. That's important because most music copyright cases are heard in either the Second Circuit or the Ninth Circuit. Adam, why would most music cases be heard in the Ninth Circuit?
John, I do not know.
It's California. That's where the music's at. So this is Ninth Circuit or Second Circuit, which is New York. That's where almost all the music cases are heard. So it is an important rule with regard to the music cases. Anyways, that's all done. That's all wrapped up. But even more importantly is a few years ago, there was that big lawsuit with Marvin Gaye and Robin Thicke. And as odious as Robin Thicke is, he lost a big lawsuit against the heirs of Marvin Gaye, saying his song where he had all the girls dancing around ripped off a Marvin Gaye song. Not because they ripped off the notes, but because they ripped off the general sound or texture of the song, which is not what the law is. That was a terrible ruling. And for a hot minute, it appears, oh, my God, music copyright cases are going to go through the roof. Because if you can rip off a sound, not notes, I mean, there's really only so many sounds, you know? So it suggested a certain chaos and mass warfare in music copyright criticism. I mean, music copyright lawsuits. However, this case is one of a few saying, no, even though we're not going to overrule the Robin Thicke ruling, that was probably a bad decision, and we're just going to try to sweep that under the rug, and we're going to go to our pre-Robin Thicke rulings, which requires something more than just similar sounds for copyright infringement to exist in the recorded context. And now the battle is honestly arguably the most famous music copyright lawsuit in USA ever has now been put to bed permanently, unless they appeal to the Supreme Court and this court elects to hear it, which I do not think they will.
The internet dick response to this that I see from everyone is to really exhaustingly quip about, like, sure, but Led Zeppelin also ripped off Robert Johnson and all this stuff that, like, of course they ripped off all these old blues guys, but that's been known since the 60s. I don't know if it's a thing you need to be snarky on Twitter about.
And in Led Zeppelin's credit, they settled all those cases. So you can't really hold that against them because they settled it. You know what I mean? So all's a square, you know?
John, as we've been sitting here, the NBA has suspended its season over the virus.
The NBA?
Oh.
Holy, this is getting crazy, man.
John, we're not going to make it to the end of this podcast.
Oh, my. We're going to suspend the podcast. Holy crap. That's insane. Adam, do you know how much money that is?
Oh, well, hey, maybe they can funnel it our way.
Yeah. NBA, wow, I thought the NBA wouldn't suspend for anything just because there's so much money at stake. Wow, that's crazy.
Ooh, all right, so speaking of crazy, do we want to talk about this anthrax thing?
Yeah, well, we can get to next week or whatever.
Good, because I don't want to talk about this anthrax thing.
All right, pick.
John, do you have a song that we're gonna kick out of here?
Yeah. So a little while ago, I mentioned that the band The Comatines, someone was reissuing The Comatines' discography. And the only reason we covered it is because they were a relatively obscure, not that well-known New York band that was active in the late early punk scene and the early post-punk scene. And I didn't really know anything about them at the time we talked about it, but I actually went out and got their album, and The Comatines are friggin' awesome. So here's a track by The Comatines from the first album. You should check them out.
Sometimes I have it, but then sometimes I don't. You are my nightmare and I'll never this, they take you. Sometimes I think when you hold me, I hate you. I get so nervous and the hours are slow. I need it quickly and I can't let go. Sometimes I have this, but then sometimes I don't. You are my nightmare and I'll never wake up. Sometimes I have this, but then sometimes I don't. You are my nightmare and I'll never wake up. Wake up. Wake up. Wake up. Wake up.
All right, we're back. That was the Comateens. If you want to send us any mail, it is podcast@punknews.org. That is how you reach us. Sean M, I guess we will reconvene and further podcast if any of us lasts the lasts the evening, it seems like.
This is crazy.
Good luck.